Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, Counsel. Your Honors, I'm here today on behalf of my client, the defendant in this case, Joshua Henry. And we are here, basically, this whole appeal boils down to what Federal Rule of Criminal Procedure Section B1H means when it says any maximum possible penalty, including imprisonment, fine, or any term of supervised release.
But I don't understand why you aren't really here trying to explain to us why the appellate waiver precludes review, because there's no doubt that it is within the authority of a court to impose consecutive sentences. And so there can't be any issue about whether the term exceeded the maximum provided by law. Law means law. It doesn't mean sentencing guidelines or anything else. So I've never seen anything that required a district court judge to go into detail about consecutive versus concurrent.
And I agree with that, Your Honor, is that I didn't see anything requiring it, but the language saying any maximum possible penalty and then moving on to including term of imprisonment, that list doesn't suggest that it's just exclusive. It's just some things that the court has to
include. I know, but I want to go back to the waiver, because the waiver in the plea agreement says he knowingly waives the right to appeal ... any part of the sentence or the manner in which that sentence was determined, including any term of imprisonment and fine within the maximums provided by law. And I'm saying, because the law permits consecutive sentences, I am at a loss to see why this isn't covered by the waiver.
The reason I felt the waiver is ineffective is because it rises and falls based on the same colloquy as the plea. It's at the end of that colloquy. It's another question tacked onto the end of that colloquy. And if the court
But you have no authority for the fact that a plea isn't knowingly and voluntarily made when somebody isn't told about consecutive sentence possibilities. There is no law that says that.
I agree with that, Your Honor. Only the wording of the statute or the rule itself. I looked for case law to either support or distinguish from. The government found case law from other circuits, which I didn't cite to, that kind of dance around the issue that I have in front of the court, but aren't on all fours with it. I think that this is a unique case.
The sentence to which this was consecutive, wasn't that an indeterminate sentence?
It is, Your Honor.
Well, what valuable information would be conveyed to the defendant by being told, well, you could be sentenced to a consecutive sentence or a concurrent sentence. If it's consecutive, it's consecutive to this indeterminate sentence, so who knows? Who knows what the difference would be, right?
Well,
so what does he do with that? I mean, you can overload defendants with information about should you tell them about different prison conditions, and there are good prisons and there are nasty prisons, and you may be sent to one, you may be sent to the other.
No,
stop.
Because it says maximum possible penalty, that's where I think it should stop. He was serving a state sentence. He was writted over. The court knew that he was still serving this indeterminate sentence. Now, I understand it is indeterminate, but it still would matter whether or not it was running.
Wouldn't his lawyer have to conduct a study of Iowa sentencing practices to see what the likely actual prison term of an indeterminate sentence for his Iowa crime would be in order to give him the full information about and the probability of a concurrent versus a consecutive sentence?
And we did that, Your Honor. The probability, had he not been writted over, he in all likelihood would have been paroled, which was something that the district court didn't seem to take into account when they ran it consecutive.
Would be paroled in Iowa?
He would have been paroled in Iowa before he was sentenced at the federal level had he stayed in and not been put in
federal custody. So what was the actual significance of a consecutive sentence?
What happened was he didn't get paroled because he wasn't in Iowa working towards, there are certain programs and things you have to do in prison to get paroled. You can't just sit on your hands and not get out. So the practical effect was this. He was in federal custody for 15 months, not working towards that. Then, as these were run consecutive, he got sent back to Iowa. He has just been paroled last month sometime. So the practical effect was an extra 6 months onto his sentence.
So that's the whole significance of consecutive versus is 6 months?
Yes, Your Honor. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Noel. Mr. Paganini?
May it please the Court, my name is Scott Paganini and I represent the United States of America. Your Honors, this Court should dismiss the defendant's appeal because the issues raised by the defendant in his appeal fall within the scope of the express terms of the appellate waiver. The defendant, as part of that waiver, agreed to waive his right to appeal his sentence, including the manner in which his sentence was determined. The sentence that he received was within the maximums provided by the law. As such, the appellate waiver should be enforced and the appeal should be dismissed. Alternatively, the district court did not commit a plain error in failing to inform the defendant that his federal sentence could run consecutive to his undischarged state sentence. And this court should, if it decides that the appellate waiver should not be enforced, this court should affirm the judgment and the sentence of the district court provided to the defendant. If there's any further questions.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Paganini. Mr. Noel, do you have anything further?
Very briefly, Your Honor. Judge Wood, I want to more specifically address the question you gave me. I believe there's no play in the joints between the waiver of appellate rights and the colloquy of plea of guilty, and I didn't know if I made that clear before. I believe if you find that the plea is valid, then there's no doubt that the appellate waiver is valid. The other thing I wanted to mention very briefly is the government cited a Sixth Circuit case. It was a United States versus Ospina, which is the closest that it comes to this case on all fours. The big difference there is that the district court actually did tell the defendant that he could run the sentences concurrently. It's just that it was mandatory that he had to. He didn't use the mandatory language in the colloquy. So the Circuit Court of Appeals said that still withstood the constitutional muster. They also went on to say that. So their opinion there is more dicta, saying that he didn't have to tell him about the consecutive sentences because of the specific facts in that case. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Nolan. You were appointed, were you not?
I was, Your Honor.
Yes, well, we thank you for your efforts on behalf of your client.